It's the Wintrust Business Lunch Hour. I'm Bob Surratt.
And I'm Marianne Murciano. Hello.
Coming up, we will introduce you to a local entrepreneur who has come up with a doll for your daughter who loves sports.
Oh, well, if our daughter was a little younger, she would be in the market for that. I don't know if she would play with any doll at age almost 15. She's 14 and a half. Well, 14 and almost.
I know. I only know one thing. She doesn't want to be seen with me anymore. What's up with the Hancock Building? Name change? Are they going to do something at the base of the building there that many will think resembles Times Square? We'll get into that as well. Coming up in a little while, the one of the folks from Preservation Chicago will be joining us to talk about that. First up, from CNBC, market analyst John Najarian. And I guess, John, the question today is, will the Fed raise rates or won't it? What is the speculation you're hearing there?
Well, they will raise rates eventually here, Bob. But certainly they didn't get any ammunition to do it sooner today. They had the construction worst report in 4 years. That was down 17% month over month. Reason is, of course, the weather that we had in Chicago and that we had out here in New York, where I work half the week, has been pretty horrific for construction. And that contributed to that pretty negative reading. I think we'll see a rebound from there. But nonetheless, it won't feed into this particular Fed report that we'll be reading, Janet Yellen, and whether or not she removed patience from the Fed statement that we'll get at 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon.
Is that what is affecting the market and in the way that it is today negatively?
Well, and it was in a much bigger way earlier in the day, of course, Marianne. After yesterday's big rally, we started off today with a pretty harsh sell-off, but then the market seemed to sort of gather itself and is trying to make a bit of a comeback here. I mean, after being down 190 points this morning, the Dow is clawing its way back. Crude oil is pushing back towards $44 to the barrel. It had dipped all the way down to, I think, 43.10 this morning, so it's nearly a dollar higher than that right now. And the 10-year rate's pretty stable at 2.06. So with the euro stable and crude oil not falling off a cliff like it was yesterday, we'll see exactly how the rest of our day plays out today. I think it feels like the market wants to make a little time back from some of the selling that went on this morning.
Isn't it a little disturbing to see how volatile it is, that news of one or two things could really affect it that much?
Yes, it is a little disturbing in that regard. It's been, Marianne, about the hedging that companies do. I mean, we just did a big report on CNBC about how of the Dow 30 stocks, a third of them, or nearly 10 of them, are near their 52-week lows. Sort of a stealth sell-off. And it probably won't surprise you, however, to learn that that third of the Dow is really stocks that have big exposure to the business that they do overseas, because a strong dollar is bad for McDonald's. It's bad for Coca-Cola and for many of the stocks that, of course, are multinationals. That dollar has been so strong. The euro to the dollar, just as that example goes, back in January was 122 to the dollar. Today it's 106. That's a very quick drop. And when you see a drop that much, it's very difficult for anybody who's trying to hedge their exposure. It doesn't matter if it's Coca-Cola, McDonald's, or whomever, to hedge that exposure and yet not cripple themselves in terms of profitability for whatever they're selling, whether it's that syrup in the case of Coca-Cola or whether it's meat and the rest of the things that McDonald's sells.
There's one corner of the market that's less affected by what happens overseas, small cap stocks. Is that something you're high on these days, John?
Well, they have been outperforming, as you say, Bob. You're very accurate about that. You look at some parts of the Dow in particular, like the ones I named, small caps are up about 3% year to date. If you look at the IWM, That's the Russell. It's 2,000 different small cap stocks. That you compare it to the Dow or the S&P that are either flat or barely up on the year. That's outperformance, although it's not huge outperformance. Nonetheless, those stocks have been doing a little better, and I think they'll continue to do better because lower for longer with interest rates affects these guys when they want to borrow, just as it affects Apple. But these guys get the benefit of that lower rate where normally they would be paying a higher amount of interest. The fact that rates are close to zero really benefits these guys a lot more. Apple always has power when it comes to borrowing. So does IBM. So does any big S&P 500 stock. But the stocks in the Russell, generally, the credit worthiness is not quite the same. So just like anybody who borrows money knows, they charge you a higher interest rate when your credit isn't quite as good as, you know, that multimillionaire down the block.
As Kim reported on the news, price at the pump, gas down a little bit now, and this is usually the time of year that it creeps back up. Do you foresee a year where we're going to stay well under $3 a gallon, John?
I do. The only problem is, Bob, parts of Chicagoland still are going to be close to that $3 level that you just described, but for most of the rest of the country outside of California, where I think we're going to be in the low twos for the entire year. That glut of oil is really good for refiners. That's why we've bought a lot of those lately, because we think lower for longer in energy terms as well. And I think that's good for refiners, certainly going to be good for shippers, airlines, and the consumer for the 2015.
We'll get a stock pick from John Najarian, co-founder of Option Monster and Trade Monster, coming right up. Stock pick time. CNBC's John Najarian with us. All right, Dr. J, what do you like this week?
Well, we were buying up some of this stock called Atmel, A-T-M-L, today, Bob. And the reason is that these guys are pretty much a play for microcontrollers, touch devices and so forth that need that kind of microcontroller. Well, that would be anything from, you know, some products that operate similar to Apple products where you're touching a screen and moving things around. Apple, of course, was talking about bringing an Apple TV streaming service that might unbundle some of the things that you have to pay for with cable and basically deliver that content to you over the Internet.
And they're saying as soon as next fall, right?
Yep. Yep, this coming fall, Marianne, exactly right. And maybe it'll be somewhere between $30 and $40 a month and be all the networks as well as ESPN and FX. That'll be interesting to see how it plays out. This isn't quite the a hardware solution that Apple has been rumored to be exploring for years, you know, an actual TV. But instead, this would be something that's a next step beyond just that little black box that they have that allows you to, over the Internet, view all kinds of different content.
So this stock, the Atmel, yeah, mm-hmm. Atmel. So how and how does it work with that?
Well, they have a bunch of touch products. So the more that we see, and those microcontrollers for those touch products. So the more we see, Marianne, people moving towards smart televisions, which obviously many Americans have already made that move. Some of these will be perhaps devices that will work with those smart televisions, whether it's an iPad, any type of touch device that you might use to manipulate your TV or any viewing that you might be doing over the Internet. I think a lot of these touch devices are extremely popular because they allow you not to sit there and when you're trying to type in things like passwords and things like that over a TV clicker, it's extremely difficult. But some of these other devices will make that next step much easier. And Atmel, it's an $8 stock. It's about a $3 billion market cap. The stock yields almost a dividend yield of 2%. So it's not crazy to think that maybe the stock trades up over 10%. that was one of the things people were betting on, was that by August, this $8.50 stock could be closer to $10. That would be a nice return indeed, and that's why we bought it today.
And so this is the kind of stock that you will hold on to until August, because I was going to ask you, how much time do you give a stock that you're just speculating on?
Well, and I'm not just speculating on it. This one does have unusual activity. We've seen a whole bunch of buying activity around this name today, and so we figure maybe there's an announcement that's coming out. Certainly people do speculate whenever Apple makes an announcement like this, that what could be some of the benefits that fall to some of the providers of smart applications like these guys, Atmel, and whether it's, you know, somebody that makes a camera, for instance, like OmniVision or some of these guys, or whether it's somebody that makes a touch application like these guys. We think that might be one of the reasons that some institutions are buying the stock today.
John, do professional investors and money managers such as yourself see these stories that seem to come out every week now bashing McDonald's and think now is a good time to buy? What's happening with that stock lately?
I thought it was a good time to buy just as the previous CEO was more or less forced out, Bob. With the stock now trading at $96 a share, call it $96.50. It's about $8 above the 52-week low and about the same amount under the 52-week high. In other words, it's smack in the middle of its range. I don't think they're going to have as much trouble hedging going forward as they've had over the last little bit, because, as I say, it's that velocity where you just can't keep up with it, whether it's crude oil running in one direction or another, or whether it's the euro versus the dollar. McDonald's sells, obviously, billions and billions of dollars every quarter in terms that are not dollar-denominated, but are instead euro or yen or whatever around the world. And they have to hedge that currency exposure. When the dollar is gaining strength as much as it is, they have to keep making those hedges, and it gets more and more expensive for them to chase this thing. And when the euro is going from 122 to 106, again, that's just crushing for anybody that does business overseas. And over 50% of McDonald's business does indeed come from those exact areas of the world other than the United States. So I think that's the issue, Bob, more than McDonald's doing something wrong.
Hey, Shamrock Shake sales have to be up today. That's good news for the company.
That's good news for the company. And there'll be more good news, I think, in the future.
John Najarian, always a pleasure. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, Bob.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, Marianne.
Market metrics and the latest headlines. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
We've got someone who is soon to be famous, a young entrepreneur from Glen Ellen with a pretty good idea, the founder of Dream Big Toy Company. Jody Norgaard joins us. Go-Go Sports, is that the name of the business, Jody?
It's Dream Big Toy Company, and the product is Go-Go Sports Girls.
And before we get into this doll that you've come up with and are selling now, let's go back to how this all started. Is your background in coaching and working with girls' sports?
Well, I was a coach for Girls on the Run for 4 years, in which my daughter participated, and that was one of the reasons I started this product. I saw the Girls on the Run. It was such a wonderful program, and it was very positive, and I saw the positive effects it had on not only the girls participating, but me too.
Girls on the Run being a place where they got to play sports?
Oh, you know, that's a good question. Girls on the Run is an organization out of North Carolina, and what they do is that they have these programs for girls in third, fourth, and fifth grade. It's like putting on your suit of armor before you enter middle school. So it teaches you to set goals and achieve your goals. It's not about winning. It's about setting a goal, achieving a goal. And then I did it here in Glen Ellen, and then at the end of the 10-week program, you do a 5K down on the on the lakefront, which is awesome.
Oh, fun.
So tell us about your genesis as a businesswoman, an entrepreneur.
Right. So I did have an aha moment. I know a lot of entrepreneurs say they have an aha. I did have an aha moment. I was with my daughter when she was 9 years old, and she's in her cute little soccer uniform, and we're at this toy store on a Saturday, and she had just gotten done playing soccer. And we're in the doll aisle, and I see a line of dolls that were dressed so inappropriately. They had short skirts, yes, crop top, belly button ring, big hair, lots of makeup.
Yes.
I'm like, what are we marketing to our girls? So I picked up this one particular doll to look at the hang tag, and the name on the hang tag was Lovely Lola. And I thought, oh my gosh, there is not one parent out there that wants their daughter to look like Lovely Lola, act like Lovely Lola, be called Lovely Lola. So I bought the doll to show my husband, and I was kind of scolding the, you know, this poor salespeople. I'm like, you should not be carrying this doll. This is horrific. So I brought it home to show my husband, and I said, you know what? I think I can do something about this. I think I can do something to encourage girls to be healthy physically, mentally, and emotionally through sports and physical activity.
And so the you're selling a sports doll, but it also is a book set. Talk about that. Yeah.
So in June, we launched a line of books, 6 books to go along with 6 of the dolls. We've packaged them together, and it's called Read and Play. And it really has brought the dolls to life. And so in all the books, we've put different facts about each sport. So in soccer, where it's originated and what you should wear, or in gymnastics, how you need to wear your hair up and no jewelry so you don't hurt yourself. And it's all about, it gives us tips about healthy eating and, you know, drinking water, not those sugary drinks, and eating grapes and not those sugary snacks.
It's a great idea. I'm always intrigued by these stories of how an idea comes to fruition, because you didn't really have a background in manufacturing anything, did you?
Oh, my gosh, no.
So how did you do it? Tell us the story. Like, you got this idea. Here you are with this, hoochie doll or whatever it was. I mean,
that's what it was.
That is what it was. Yeah, I know those dolls. And you're horrified, and then now you want to create something else, but you're not a seamstress yourself.
No.
And you, I don't know if you're an artist, but you had ideas. Right. How did you make them turn into this beautiful boxed set?
Well, I bought a big sketch pad. I'm an okay drawer. I'm okay enough to get by. And I took a picture of my daughter when she was a year, and I started to do caricatures of that. And I kept the notebook, this big drawing pad. And then I started measuring. And then I started measuring my daughter and her girlfriends as they walked through the doors. You know,
like
just
for height or for proportions?
Proportion. That's exactly it. So their wingspan, the length of their legs, so I could make the doll in correct proportion to a little girl's bodies, and it didn't have like a huge chest, and it didn't have super long legs, and it was not going to play a sport in high heels. So I just started measuring, and then I handed it over to a friend of mine who's a seamstress, and she has 5 daughters, so this really resonated with her. And so she made the prototypes, and then we sent them off to China, which I needed help with factories over there. So anyway, bottom line, it took 2 years from rough draft to the actual debut of the first doll, which was Tennis Girl, named after my daughter Gracie, at the U.S. Open in New York. They bought 500 right out of the gate.
And how did you sell it to them?
Well, you know what? It was so bizarre. I literally picked up the phone, and I Googled their number, and I dialed it, and I said, can I talk to somebody in your buying department? And then they switched me, and I said, I have these dolls. I literally was in my car, and they said, oh, we'll take 500. And they
just like that.
Just like that. That was easy. It hasn't always been that easy. A lot of the major retailers have told me it'll never sell because it's not fashion. It's not mainstream, and my response has always been, you know, mainstream ideas never create change, and I'm creating change. So hopefully one day they will become mainstream.
This is a great story. The one thing that many successful entrepreneurs have in common when they tell their story, there's always a sentence that begins with, a factory in China. I guess you have to do that,
you
do. Don't you?
I did research the states, and it truly, I would lose money.
Yeah,
I couldn't.
That's a shame. It's too bad.
It's
that way. Now, what do these sell for, and where can people buy them now?
What are the stories that you tell about these dolls?
You mean the
in the books?
Okay, the books. They're all about. Normal everyday problems like gymnastics girl. She's afraid of doing things, so she goes down into the a basement, and how does she overcome this? So there's no boy problems, there's no diva problems, there's just good old-fashioned everyday kid problems, and they're very engaging, and they've won awards. And the biggest retailer to pick them up, and they'll roll out next week, is Walmart. So 180 Walmarts in the U.S. They're online everywhere.
What do they sell for?
Oh, $24.99.
Well, it's a great idea. It's a great product, and it's something that's really good for the kids, isn't it?
Yeah. It's encouraging girls to use their body and their minds in a healthy way, and not to be pigeonholed into what you have to look like. It's what can you do with your body?
I imagine the reaction's got to be positive.
Oh, I get emails every day.
What do people say?
Oh, my gosh. They're like, thank you so much. We love this. Dara Torres has endorsed them, the Olympic swimmer, and Carrie Tollefson. She's an Olympic runner. I mean, just out of the blue. We love this for our girls. Thank you.
And what's next? So you have six of them, you said?
Oh, I have six read and plays. I have 13 different dolls.
And so what is next? Are you going to look for more sports? Mm-hmm. Do you want to find athletes maybe that sponsor them?
I would love to have more athletes endorse them. I think that would be wonderful. Kind of gives me more credibility. But then we would like to add more books, a line of clothing for the dolls. And under the umbrella of Dream Big Toy Company, I also feel it's important to encourage kids to do whatever they enjoy doing. So whether it be a go-go reading girl, a go-go music girl, a go-go sports boy, there are many possibilities.
It'll happen for you. It is happening.
It's
already
happening. Yes.
Soon to be famous.
So great.
Jody Norgard of Go-Go Sports Girl, founder of Dream Big Toy Company in Glen Ellen. It's a great story.
Thank you.
Continued success to you. Thanks for talking to us today.
Thank you. Good luck.
Thanks.
More on the Wintrust Business Lunch coming up on 720 WGN.
Big story in the Sun Times today, Sneed's exclusive. Apparently, there are proposals being pitched now that could include a naming rights deal for the Hancock building, because the John Hancock Company no longer owns the building. And many people are a little concerned about some proposed changes to the Hancock Center, to the plaza. There are plans for some new signage and some new building on the plaza. And here to talk a little bit about that and some concerns that many folks have, Ward Miller from Preservation Chicago, citizens advocating for the preservation of Chicago's historic architecture. And I guess the Hancock at this point is considered historic, isn't it, Ward?
It really is. Isn't that kind of ironic? A building that we all remember going up. Well, some of us do.
Yeah, for sure.
But this is a really an important building. The first really major superstructure to go up in Chicago, and one of those buildings that we just associate with the city. It's an iconic building in every regard.
And the way I understand this, the concern is mainly for a multi-lighted glass sign facing Michigan Avenue that could display a new name. Is that what you're worried about here?
We're worried about all the impacts on this historically significant work of art and architecture designed by Bruce Graham and Skidmore, Owings & Merrill, with Fosler Kahn as the structural engineer. And this is like the granddaddy of all the modern skyscrapers that we see around the world, Bob. And we are concerned about a proposed rendering that has been floated around the neighborhood and with several groups about a recording studio with a very tall glass enclosure on the plaza, as well as new canopies with large signage. And, you know, we assume that, you know, that could lead to other ideas.
So that'd be in the front of the building facing Michigan Avenue.
Right, and above every entry. There's a proposed 40-foot approximately glass signage plank, almost like a billboard, if you will, you know, made out of glass and, you know, probably done with some style, but obviously it would impact the building.
And it's all about the character of Michigan Avenue and blending in, isn't it?
Correct. I mean, you know, the Hancock Building did change the character of Michigan Avenue. It made, you know, as a superstructure planted on a sort of a genteel boulevard, if you will, in its day. But how could, you know, I remember the concerns about the Hancock Building as a kid growing up in Chicago in the shadow of it. But now, you know, I have to admit, I couldn't imagine Chicago without the John Hancock Building.
Well, yeah, and the plaza. I mean, I like the way it's set back from Michigan Avenue. And you go downstairs into that area where, what is it, the Cheesecake Factory is and some other.
No, a number of businesses, yeah.
Yeah, and it's nice because it's not, it didn't clutter up Michigan Avenue there, did it?
Correct. That's exactly the idea. And, you know, the building is set back with this plaza, and that goes into zoning rights and, you know, quality of life and air and shadow issues, right? And that was really an unusual building and a building type of its day in the 1960s.
So when we're talking about possibly having all this glass structure in front of it, how would that either clutter things up or maybe blend in?
Yeah, you know, we don't know the exact materials. We're sort of guessing from some of these renderings that you've seen. But in reality, this is all just really a lot of clutter and a lot of accoutrements attached to the building. And all these things sort of undermine it, you know.
It's almost like too much jewelry on an outfit.
Marianne, you criticizing there anything for too much jewelry?
Yes.
It's all these accessories and additions that sort of undermine the purity of the design. And, you know, when we look at landmarking buildings all the time, we look for integrity issues. And these things sort of impact the integrity issues over time.
Well, thank goodness for what you do and Preservation Chicago and other folks who want to preserve the great architecture and the look of our city. Marianne and I talk about this all the time. We talk about it on the air. We talk about it off the air. And, you know, you go to New York, great buildings, but you got those canyons there. And in Chicago, we have these great wide open spaces with our great architecture. And as you travel to other countries, you also realize we're the finest in the world. And you want to hang on to that in spite of the fact that there's a building boom going on.
And in many cities, I mean, I find we go to Miami a lot because I'm from Miami. And the sense that you get in not to bash Miami at all.
No, we don't mind bashing Miami.
No, no,
anything goes
like
there.
Anything goes. Yeah. It's like if you can
build anything wherever
build anything
you want,
and it can look any way. And personally, like aesthetically, I'm telling you, the Hancock has these X's on it. They look like X's. You can't mix a lot of stuff with that. I mean,
right.
That's just my opinion.
And that's part of the, you know, that's part of the structural and visual integrity of the building. And that's really important to preserve, as well as the plaza space, which is really, which connects the building to its, to Michigan Avenue and its site.
So what
which
do you
is
do,
really
what,
amazing.
What do you do now? What's the next step?
Well, we're hoping to recommend the building to the Commission on Chicago Landmarks, which is a city agency that protects landmark buildings, our quality buildings, you know, from Carson Perry Scott in the auditorium to the Rookery, the Monadnock, and other great buildings that we just think of as iconic skyscrapers in that march to get higher and higher in the mm-hmm. sky and use steel and other materials to an architectural expression to really define these buildings. And these are the things that make Chicago so special.
Absolutely.
You know, as you were pointing out, there's nothing like Chicago.
We were talking about this yesterday. I just have a minute here left, but fill me in on the old L station, the CTA station at Wabash and Madison that was closed yesterday. I waxed nostalgic about it here yesterday. It's 1896, I believe it was
That's
built.
Correct.
There are plans to demolish it. Are you trying to preserve some part of it?
Yes, this was part of our Chicago 7 for 2014 last year, and we are involved with CDOT and CTA and a host of other organizations, including the Chicago History Museum and the Rebuilding Exchange and, of course, Preservation Chicago, to save the facade of this building. It's actually, we're hoping to remove it along with most of its components and get it to an institution, which is really remarkable. And we'd also like to start the discussion about preserving other elevated stations that are historic to the structure. And maybe the new ones that we're building, like State and Lake in the future, could resemble the spirit of the old ones with the drawings.
Well, you know, especially on Wabash Avenue, and the new one's going to be at Washington, the one at Madison, the one at Randolph going away. But, yeah, it's a great, great historic look, and I love it. Many people who grew up here, it brings back fond memories. So hopefully, what I'm saying to you, Ward, is I'd like a piece of it to take home.
Well, no, he cannot bring anything home.
Well, just tell me where I can go visit it.
You know what, Bob? It's going to be Preservation Chicago is taking ownership, and it's going to be on display at the Rebuilding Exchange on Webster near between Ashland and Elston. If all goes well, and we're really hoping to make a good story out of something that was, you know, unfortunate, but really open that dialogue about preservation. And it's ironic that Smithsonian Museum in Washington has an L display. It's part of America on the Move, and it's the Madison Wabash L station.
Well, preserve the payphone that's on that station too, Wabash and Madison. Now, Ward Miller, Preservation Chicago, keep us posted, will you?
Absolutely. And I want you to know there's some amazing rooms that we got into last week, and we'll have pictures of that online soon.
Great. Talk to you down the road.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch with Bob Sherrod and Marianne Murciano on 720 WGN.